Welcome to the Open House podcast site, available at openhousecommunity.com.au.
Yes, and we're trying something a bit different tonight in our always popular human condition segment with our resident Open House guru, clinical psychologist Lynn Worsley. We're extending one of our other very popular segments that's taken off this year tonight to Lynn. It is this: ask anything. If there's anything on your mind or in life, or in the human condition, relationships, self-image, your inner thought life, give Lynn a call tonight, 1-300-40-2020. You have the honour of speaking with her personally. Promises to be a lively conversation. Lynn, hi.
Hi, Lynn.
I've got to give an apology for earlier in the night.
Oh, okay.
I said that Day by Day was from Joseph, and it was from Godspell.
Yes, I did hear that.
Operator error. Fading 70s brain. Anyhow, I still love the song. So welcome. It's great to have you with us. So you're up for any and all kinds of questions from your hugely admiring listeners. What kinds of questions? Give us a couple of arenas that might trigger some thoughts.
Look, Lee, there's many questions that come up with looking at people's mental health, looking at, say, when you have a loved one who's not coping very well and what it is that makes them resilient. Resilience is the area that I particularly specialise in. You know, sometimes people have been through trauma, and other times people have difficult personalities and some difficult traits. And I'm quite happy to tackle any questions, and I may not be able to answer them all, but it would be good to at least try and see if we can have a discussion about it.
She is very wise. Worsley wisdom for you if you'd like to give us a call on 1-300-40-2020. You mentioned resilience. I'm always intrigued on this. You're the founder of the resilience donut idea. Why do you study resilience? What is it that you've learnt about that aspect of the human condition that makes you so passionate about it, Lynn?
Why I study resilience is because when I was in my early years of working, I was always I guess intrigued as to why some people managed to survive and thrive and others didn't.
Yes.
And particularly when you think that somebody is likely to not cope very well and yet they do really, really well. And so it always stuck to me that wouldn't it be great to be able to help other people who are going through a lot of difficulties to actually be able to tackle life and become quite resilient in the process. And I'm also really interested in not just in resilience, but in also helping people to move towards a sense of happiness and joy in their life. And, you know, what we know is that people who are resilient or happy people are resilient. Not always resilient people are happy.
Yes, that's a good point, the distinction.
That's right. But so my real passion is to actually help people move forward in a positive direction towards being able to manage their lives well.
We've had a series on the Resilience Donut before, and if you want to get onto our podcast page of our Open House Community website, it's well worth listening. But if people haven't heard of the Resilience Donut idea, and there's a bit of a new development in the life of the Resilience Donut, tell us what it is and what's new.
Okay, what the Resilience Donut is, it's a model of how a person will build their resilience or grow their resilience in their lifetime. And the model is the shape of a donut, which is why we call it the Resilience Donut. And the model has seven factors in the outside part of the donut that interact with the internal characteristics of a person.
Yes.
And so as you grow, those seven factors, which are relationships, really different contexts of different relationships, and they're the relationships that then connect you with your core beliefs of who you are and what you, how you think, and how you think you can manage to cope.
Yes.
Now, what is really exciting is that what I think is the core parts of resilience is that you have three parts. One is the resources, which is what the Resilience Donut covers. Two is your level of competence that you grow in your lifetime.
Yep.
Through relating to all of the people around you. And thirdly, it's actually adversity. So having to go through difficult times helps you to become resilient. And the exciting thing that we've had launched this week,
I'm
very excited about, is we've actually launched the Resilience Report. And the Resilience Report means you can go in online, you can do a snapshot of your resilience at any point in time. You can have a look and see how your competence is going, where your connecting points are, and if there's any difficulties that you're going through, and really you can make an assessment as to whether you've got enough competencies or whether you might need to have a donut moment, and you can look that up on the podcast. You can need a donut moment in order to cope with your difficulties at that time.
Lynn's often counselling us at night here after we speak about our little resilience donut moments. We know them well. So that's really good. Just tell us the site of where people can hook into this.
Yes, if you hook into it, it's on www.resiliencereport.com.
.resiliencereport.com.
That's right.
Okay. Now we have some calls. Big breath. Anna's called in from Mount Waverley. Hi, Anna.
Hi, how are you going?
Hi, here's Lynn. She's all ears.
Hi, Anna. Hi, Lynn. How are you going?
Good. Tell me about what it is that you want to ask.
Well, I guess the two words human condition sort of, you know, prompted something in me because I've been dealing with both my parents who were diagnosed with dementia probably nearly 2 years ago, and it's been a bit difficult. A parallel race with the two of them, and I guess what I am struggling with, as my father in particular is struggling with, is you know, reconciling the man he was and who he is now, because I guess ultimately his personality is just magnified more now. And what I mean by that, he's always been, you know, a very difficult man.
So he's become more difficult now.
Yeah, the glass is half empty. Everything is negative. Everything is really, really bad. And so I guess, you know, my frustration, and I also work in the funeral industry, so I see a lot of people and stories about at their end of their life. And so is it the human condition that I've been thinking is, you know, did these people somewhere along the line have choices, or is it that, you know, I acknowledge and a lot of compassion to my dad's story, and, you know, what you say about relationships is very true. You know, he's lived through a war, and he talks about the occupation and came over as a migrant and worked hard. But I think his call was very rocked about their family relationships, and that dynamic was very, I think, traumatic for all the children in some way, and maybe that's what scarred him. But I just feel a frustration at the moment, more an anger, thinking, wasn't there at some point an opportunity to do something with that, or are some people so traumatized and stuck and don't seek help, who think they don't have choices and therefore achieve the end of their life not having found peace or reconciling that. And so there's a part of me that is really angry with him, you know, going, you're going to die unhappy, you know, you can't look back on your life and find any joy or anything. And
so your question is, did he have a choice at some point, or is it something that he wasn't able to change?
Yeah, and I see, you know, other people around me, in particular with the people or even just some colleagues that are just really unhappy, and yet, you know, they're choosing to live their life like that.
You know, this is a question that I debate quite often, and it's a philosophical question.
Can you find me the answer quickly?
If I could find the answer quickly, that would be great, but I think we could talk about it all night.
Just fix it, Lynn.
But really, the question that you're asking is, I think it actually comes to the very core of our Christian belief. It is that sense that we have choice. Each of us are born with choice, and that is a God-given choice. We're not animals, and we have choice. We have choice to understand and seek understanding, but we have also choice to curl up and just do things that we want to do. And I believe that when I've met with people who've made some difficult choices in their lives, earlier in their lives, they've chosen to move further and further away towards just pleasing themselves. That sometimes that means it almost like means that their choices to come back are harder. And so maybe for your dad, maybe at some point when he's had the trauma, he's had a choice as to how he would handle that. And if you pick up the words of Viktor Frankl, who was in a German concentration camp, and his observation of the human condition was that those people who had a real purpose and meaning in their lives, or a faith, they did much better than those who didn't. And his observation was that they chose to believe. They chose directions that was towards the positive and wasn't towards being bitter. Mm. And, you know, so I really believe, even if we've been dealt a pretty hard card, that we have a choice as to how we manage it.
Which gives us great hope generationally in families.
Definitely.
If our families have been places of sadness or trouble, you know, like Anna, we've got a chance to kind of break through the generational.
I think it's really encouraging, Anna, that you're observing and you're questioning, because if you're questioning that, then you're exercising the choice that perhaps your father didn't see, and so you're exercising that for him.
Well, I think it's the suffering that he, you know, has chosen not to believe, or he has turned. And we've had some very philosophical, you know, Greek background, so, you know, we're really into philosophy and all of that.
Yep.
But he chose to turn away from God, and we've had that discussion. And because of that, I said to him, this is your hell, you know, and then I try and also find the benevolence of, you know, we've talked about Jesus. I said, you know, don't worry about proving what's right and wrong in the Bible. You know, what did he espouse, you know, about love and all of that? And he go, oh, yeah, no. But then I see he turns away from that. And I think, you know,
that must be so hard to watch.
And not being able to pull him out of that, I guess, is my, you know, I get caught in the dilemma of it. Or do I make peace that ultimately that was his choice? But I think
you can make peace that it's his choice, but I think it doesn't mean that you have to stop showing him that there's still a choice that he can make.
Can I also offer this suggestion, Anna? And I don't want to kind of hurry him through life, and he's in a hard place, especially at the moment. But a couple of weeks ago, we spoke with a palliative care expert, Professor Rod McLeod, on the whole business of meeting people as they end their lives, not just physically but spiritually, and maybe a different voice, a very wise voice there, who actually has a surprising number of optimistic stories about, as he puts it, people dying well. You can catch it on our Open House community website.
And that was on last week, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was. Yes. Yeah, it might well help him.
Yeah,
if he's up to,
and
listening.
It may help you. It may actually
help me.
Yeah.
To, I guess, in, you know, be a part of trying to deal with this, because I just have this panic that I don't know how to make this end of life for him more comfortable, given that, you know, he's, you know, kind of in his own torture, really, self-torture.
And I think, though, what you've raised is this question of how do we actually make a choice at some point. So thank you.
Okay.
Thanks, Anna.
You for sharing it. It's beautiful.
It's just so great to be able to tune in every day. It helps so many of us, I believe. So thank you.
Thank you.
You're a gem.
Bye. Thank you. Bye.
If you'd like to join the conversation, talk to Lynn firsthand, 1300 40 20 20. Leah's called from Wollongong on the New South Wales South Coast. Hi, Leah.
Hello.
Hi, Leah.
How are you going?
What would you like to say to Lynn?
I guess I'm just trying to get my question. I guess it's about coming out of controlling relationships. So you kind of come out of a controlling relationship where you're kind of used to that person almost, I guess, telling you what you think, even though you might question when they tell you what you're thinking. You're like, no, that's not what I'm thinking. But, like, you come out of that relationship and to try not to keep going back to it. You know, it's been an on and off again thing anyway.
Yeah, yeah.
Then you make the big break, and then you kind of get to the point where, oh, I guess to a degree you don't even know what you're thinking. I guess I've been wondering what it is to help.
How to move away from that controlling relationship? Was that?
Yeah, how to move away and not let it continue to define you, I guess.
Yeah, and I guess there's a number of steps in this for you, Leah. I think it's really important that you've recognised that the relationship is controlling, but it also is important for you to recognise that you've allowed that in some point in your own psyche. So it's really
important that I've allowed it.
Deep down inside, there is an allowance of that to happen. So that's you can move away from the relationship, but because there's a part of you inside that has got used to that, you then are likely to seek out other people to tell you what to do and not necessarily make your own decision. So it's really important for you to recognise that. One of the questions...
True, I want to find someone who will just tell me what I have
yes,
to do.
Yes, that's right. Yes. And so it's really important for you to have almost like a little bit of a time where you feel like you're a bit at sea. And that's a healing time. So a time where you don't have to make decisions, a time where you are in a place where you can just float for a little while. And then if you can read, if you can look at other things that are not necessarily hearing what people are telling you what to do, and then if you can spend some time thinking about what you would do if you were not afraid. That's the best question I think I would ever ask. I ask myself, I think, many times, even I'm worried about what people might think or whatever. If you can say, what would I do if I wasn't afraid? And sometimes that puts you in a place where you think, oh, my goodness, I couldn't do that.
Mm.
But, you know, when you ask that question, sometimes there's a core of you that may come forward and think, well, I'd love to do this, but I don't think I could. And then write it down. There's also a beautiful book called Hind's Feet on High Places.
Was that again?
A book called Hind's Feet on High Places by a woman called Hannah Hernahan. Wrote it in the Swiss Alps. And that would be a beautiful book for you to read and to journal as you read it. And it's about a crippled mountain goat who tries to climb the mountain, but she climbs with the Saviour in front of her. And she has a lot of trouble trying to work out whose voices are whose, and because she's been in such a controlling relationship.
Right. Okay, that sounds very good.
Ain't Lynn Worsley great?
Thank you.
All the best,
thank
Leah.
You so much indeed for your call. Hope that's helped.
Thanks a lot. Bye.
Good on you. We've decided to let those calls run because they've been really significant and deep kind of issues. We've had so many more callers, so many more questions, but we're out of time. But we'll do this next week. This
that
didn't surprise
great.
Me that this worked. So if you'd like to save up your question for Lynn, ask anything next week. Join us on 1300 402020. Lynn, as always, thank you so much.
Thanks again.
We hope you enjoyed this Open House podcast. To hear more from Open House, visit openhousecommunity.com.au.